5, 4, 3, 2.
Crank it, Jerry.
Welcome to Into the Wild, the official podcast of the Washington Wild Pigs.
What do you hear? What do you say?
It's the best sports podcast in the world. Wait, is that true?
If you're committed enough, you can make any story. I once convinced a woman that I was Kevin Costner, and it worked because I believed it.
Now, here's your host, Kyle Dawson.
Should you get the popcorn?
Welcome one, welcome all. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. After all, I've got absolutely no idea when you're listening to or watching us right here on Into the Wild, the brand spanking new and official podcast of the Washington Wild Things. Proud member of the longest running and biggest independent professional baseball league in the States, the Frontier League, an official MLB partner league. Into the Wild is available pretty much wherever you get your podcast: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeart Radio Podcasts, and YouTube, in audio form in most of those places, and with video powered by StreamYard on YouTube. We're so excited to begin this new and exciting venture to come at all of you on a different platform than normal. We know that podcasting is such a big part of our world and media landscape today, and following in the footsteps of a lot of successful big and minor league teams across all of sports, we thought this was another outlet to tell you about who we are, what we do, and about all of the exciting things the Wild Things have to offer on and off the field. It's a way to tell our story, both past and present, a way to humanize our staff and players in a way that maybe we haven't done so well at before, which we hope will get us closer with the diehard Wild Things fan, the casual Wild Things fan, and maybe even the Jimmies and the Joes and the Frannies and the Flows that maybe don't know us that well, but an opportunity with those people to create new and forever fans. Our intention with this excursion into the podcast world is to talk with some of the biggest and best names in Wild Things history, from former players, staff, coaches, fans, and more, to those affiliated with the Wild Things right now. Our intention is also to release bi-weekly episodes during the year that will serve as, like episodes today, our main guest and more, with features about the organization and what we do. And then during the season, we'll give you new ways to follow the daily life of the Wild Things with game highlights, interviews from our MixLR and Flow Sports broadcasts, as well as weekly reports, allowing you to get all of the Wild Things content that your heart desires in just one place, on top of what we already do on our website, social media, and much more. But enough of that. Let's dive right in. If I can channel my inner Steve Harvey, we've got a good one for you today. On the very first episode of Into the Wild, we'll be joined by Kent DeColvey, the rubber band man and the very first director of baseball operations of the Washington Wild Things. Vice President of Entertainment and Community Relations Stephanie Keller will join me in our sit down with Teak later in the episode, after you have heard from Teak and heard from public address announcer Benny Canan on some of the things that are going on here at Wild Things Park and with the Wild Things. I will sit down with manager Tom Vaith, and we will talk about the team, the roster as it stands, the offseason, and more as we get set for the 22nd season of Wild Things Baseball in the Frontier League in 2024, with opening day scheduled for Friday, May 10th against the Schaumburg Boomers. But first, our very special guest today is the rubber band man himself, Teak Kent DeColvey. Teak is a former right-handed reliever for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Cincinnati Reds, and Philadelphia Phillies. He played 16 seasons in Major League Baseball with an unusual, at the time, submarine delivery. Teak was known as a workhorse who holds several records for games pitched and innings pitched. He's an All-Star, a World Series champion, and much more. A 1969 graduate of Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio, he signed that year after a tryout with the Pirates and was with the organization through 1985. Made his Major League debut against the Montreal Expos May 20th of 1974, and eventually had his best seasons in 1978 and 1979, the latter of which ended with three saves against the Baltimore Orioles in the seven-game 1979 World Series, a Pirates victory. He was then an All-Star in 1980. Only in his first and last seasons was his earned run average over four. for his efforts with the Pirates. He is now in the Pittsburgh Pirates Hall of Fame. Beyond that, he also worked for AT&T Sports Network, which is formerly FSN Pittsburgh and later became Root Sports Pittsburgh, and appeared as an analyst after games from 2008 to 2017, and then announced his retirement on September 6th of 2017 from broadcasting. But before that, work on the air. He was our very first director of baseball operations. Teague also served as the pitching coach at the outset of our organization's history. It all started with a phone call from Leo Trich, the Washington County state representative at the time, asking Kent to come to Washington and run baseball operations. The rest is history. And we'll talk all about that with our guest right now on Into the Wild, Kent Tekulve. Back on Into the Wild, we promised a special guest for episode one. We've delivered, and we've told you about him already. Kent Tekulve, former director of baseball operations with the Washington Wild Things, as well as many other titles, including 16-year Major League relief pitcher. Kent, thanks for doing this. Let's start just in general. How exciting is it for you, or personal is it for you to be back in this clubhouse and in this ballpark?
You know, it's interesting when I walk in here, when I first came, this wasn't here yet. We were still building the ballpark. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was obviously in here for the first two seasons as in the manager's office and the coach's office. And it's interesting now to see how much it is still the same. And then that takes me back to those first couple of years. It takes me back to the thoughts about the beginning of the organization. It takes me back to the players that we brought in that time, the brand new players that we brought in, their first experience with Frontier League Baseball and everything else. So yeah, every time I come back into this room in particular and in the manager's mm-hmm. room is a special time for me as far as turning the clock back and remembering when.
For sure. We'll get into the Wild Things stuff, but I want to go back, if I can, to your formative years. You graduated from Marietta College. You played there in 1969, if I have it right. You graduated from Marietta. Kind of talk about that summer leading up to signing with the Pirates organization and how that went.
Well, first of all, I had a pretty good year. I had done well. Marietta was that time was a it still is a Division III school. I had been Coach Don Shiley, legendary coach of Marietta, in his first recruiting class actually, mm-hmm. and we were 10-9 our first year, and then by the time we got to senior year, we were becoming a little more respectable, and. Just having finished out my senior year, I was the guy on the staff that was going to pitch what is now considered, I guess, in Division I, the Friday night game. I was the Friday night starter. And I just remember having done well, being proud of what I did. Really wasn't thinking about professional baseball when you're in a Division III school. But yet I'd heard some rumors. Mm-hmm. And turns out that, I was going to get drafted. And it turns out that I didn't get drafted. So there was a long time between the end of the college season and actually the middle of June when I went to a tryout camp with the Pirates at Forbes Field mm-hmm. and actually got signed there to play professional baseball. So it wasn't the normal route to being a professional baseball player, but that was the route that was available.
If we can dive into that minor league system, I think a lot of the fans that are going to be listening to this and watching this, if you're on YouTube, they don't really get, and it's not a knock against them, they don't really get the minor league system, whether that's the ladder that you have to climb to get to the big leagues, or especially, and we'll talk about this later, in independent baseball, what that grind is like. And I always try to talk on broadcasts and people that are watching that may have tuned into us, always try to give a little bit of a grasp to the back end of that. But what was your minor league process like? It took a while to get to the big leagues.
Yeah, right? it took me 7 years to get through the minor leagues. And basically, it was two things. It was, number one, what I looked like. I was 6'4" and about 150 pounds. Mm. And so that didn't look like a professional baseball player. It didn't look like most major league pitchers did at that time. And, I threw a sidearm delivery. Mm-hmm. Which wasn't normally accepted as the way you're supposed to do it either. So my first big hurdle was I didn't look like I was supposed to be a guy that was going to be able to get to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. So therefore, because I didn't look like it, I basically spent 2 years at every level in the minor leagues. Typically, if you follow like the Pirates minor league system, you know, somebody goes, they have a good year, they move to the next league the next year, or they might move halfway through the year and move to the year league after that. I actually spent 7 years because I went from short season A ball, 2 years of A ball, 2 years of double A ball, and a year and a half of triple A ball. So that was not the normal progression either. Mm-hmm. And it was just basically because the evaluators looked at me and said, well, yeah, he's getting people out now in A ball, but that's not going to work in double A ball. The hitters are going to get better. They're going to catch on to him. So I'd have to go back, make the all-star team, and then they'd move me up. So that was kind of the story of why my trip through the minor league system took so long to get to the big leagues. And by the time I got there, I was 27 years old. So that's, you know, old for a rookie in the major leagues.
I think a lot of people nowadays, the content that they most like to see out of Major League Baseball is that call-up, that first initial call-up when the guy's in the minor leagues and he's getting. Do you remember your finding out that you were going to the big leagues and about your debut up with the Pirates?
Yeah, manager called me in after the game, said, you know, they need you in Pittsburgh. They want you up there. You know, and obviously, we're in Charleston, West Virginia, so it's a very short trip. It was a car ride. Get in the car and drive to Pittsburgh the next day. So I got there on a Friday. Well, it turned out that something was messed up with the paperwork or the timing or something. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the last three games of the homestand, I was not eligible to go on the roster. So I was in uniform. I was on the bench, but I wasn't eligible to play. Then we went on a road trip to Montreal. Mm-hmm. So got on the plane, flew to Montreal on Sunday after the game, and then I actually made my Major League debut on Monday at Parc Jarry in Montreal. It was a beautiful ballpark, and it was an experience, and it was something, you know, that really up until the last few years in the minor leagues, I hadn't even looked forward to. I hadn't thought about, and then all of a sudden, now there it was, and there I was standing on a big league mound facing Bob Bailey of the Montreal Expos, and yeah, this is real. This is the big leagues.
Sure. I mentioned in the intro your best years, 1978 really to 1980. Those, I mean, not that they all weren't good before that and a little bit after that too, but that 1979 team, obviously a lot of people in Pittsburgh have very fond memories of that We Are Family team. Kind of just walk us through that year and how much that team meant to you guys in the city.
Well, I came up in 75. And we either finished first or second in the division every year. 75, we won the division. 76, 77, 78, we finished second to the Phillies. Twice, they won over 100 games to beat us out for the division. And then 79, we won the division and the World Series. So through that five-year period, I went from being the last guy in the bullpen, the guy that came in when the games were out of hand, to in 79 being the closer. Mm. So, you know, I had just gradually worked my way through by being successful to get to the point where in 79, I'm the closer on a baseball club that has been really good and used to winning for such a long time. So, you know, it's not only a personal accomplishment to get there to be the closer, but to get there to be the closer on that team that always, in every year that I've been with it, had those expectations of winning the division and came real close to it almost every year. That was extra something that was added to it. So this wasn't only being a closer. This was being closer on a really good team that had a chance to do something really special. And that's what really made it different than anything else.
And you had the honor or the privilege, however, whatever word you want to use to describe it. You were on the mound for the last pitch of the World Series, and that's the dream for every ball player growing up.
Yeah, I mean, every kid who grows up in America throws a tennis ball against a garage door, and they're thinking to themselves in their head, yeah, seventh game of the World Series, throw it, we win the World Series. And, Steve Blass and I talk about this all the time. We are one of the rare kids that got to live that dream. And to be able to be there, and I can remember the moment. The last ball was the first pitch fastball to Pat Kelly, a fly ball to left center field. Omar Moreno catches it. And for the first time during the whole World Series, it dawned on me that this was the World Series. Before, they were just other games.
Just games.
This was we just won the World Series. And there were two thoughts that went through my head, and they went through in probably the reverse order that you would think that they went through. The first order was a feeling of pride that I was capable and I was able to help 24 of my teammates become world champions. You know, I was able to close out enough games. We were able to just get by. I mean, it was the last day of the regular season, you know, seventh game of the World Series. I was on the mound for both of them. So I was able to do that. And then secondly, I'm a world champion. Mm. I get a ring. That was the second thought that went through my mind. But it was just the feeling of the accomplishment after 5 years of always knowing you were close to be able to finally take that last step and win the World Series for your teammates and for yourself.
Once you wrapped up playing in the mid-80s, what did you do in between there and when you started here, which will lead us right into Washington?
I did a little bit of public relations work with the Pirates. There was a point in time where I was, I was just completely retired and didn't do anything. I did a little broadcasting with the Phillies before I did that. So there was a little bit of everything mixed in there, and really was just trying to find a way to fill time before I got to, well, the broadcasting turned out to be something that was, going to be my life's work. But I was looking for a way to get back into baseball and kind of, that was the time I was filling doing that stuff.
You did an interview a couple of years ago with one of actually our former employees, Sean Seaman, for the Fan Nation show. You talked about how you kind of got the start here with a phone call. Kind of tell us the story about how Leo gave you that call and how it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting at home, just minding my own business, and all of a sudden I get a call, hey, this is Leo Tritch, the state representative from Washington County, and we're starting a new baseball team. I'm wondering if you would be interested in it. And so he explains to me, what it is. It's the Frontier League. It's not, affiliated minor league baseball. It's guys that either didn't get drafted or guys that, had got hurt or got released or whatever, looking for a second chance. And the more I thought about it, at first I'm going, do I really want to get involved in this? And, every day, back at the ballpark. And then the more I thought about it, I said, you know what? These guys that we're going to bring in here were me. Mm-hmm. That was me coming out of college that didn't get drafted, that was looking for an opportunity to try. Now, I got lucky and, a couple breaks went my way and I actually got to go straight to affiliated ball. But had it not been, and there were no independent leagues then, had there been in independent leagues, I'd have been the prime candidate to be one of those. And I said, you know what? If I can help one kid do what I was able to do, it'll make it worth all the time in the world.
Sure. That being said, this is, as I mentioned earlier, this is a little bit different than the minor leagues. This is different than a major league organization. There's a lot more here than there is at those places, whether that's from a fan side, a community side, or just the baseball. What were those first few months like once you got here to kind of settle in and see what this was going to be like?
It was hectic because, yeah. I mean, we were literally, it was within a week after I got done, we had a press conference down at the Washington Crown Center. Announcing that the team was being named and they had the name and I was going to be the director of baseball operations and we had to go out and promote within the entire area to let people know that there was going to be a baseball team here and what it was all going to be all about. It isn't professional baseball. It is professional baseball, but it's not affiliated baseball. And, about the kids and, looking for a second chance and, my story and the whole nine yards and, we did that the whole winter. I mean, we were out basically while they're finishing building the building. We're doing the promotions, and there were many a time during the course of that winter where I wanted to grab Chris Blaine by the throat and shake her because she had me at Chamber of Commerce meetings at 7:30 in the morning. I'm a baseball player.
Yeah.
We sleep until noon.
That's what
and
I'm
then
saying.
We get up and then we go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yep. So. But we did, we did all the things that we needed to do. We worked out of the Crown Center. We didn't even have an office up here yet. And, watched them put the construction together and finish up the project and get ready for the first season.
Stephanie?
So is that what made you believe in it? Is that it was yourself? Like you, what sold you on becoming a Wild Thing and helping with the organization since you did have success and it was solely because it was you?
I don't know. It wasn't solely because it was me. No, what I brought to the table was a recognizable name that was associated with the Washington Wild Things. People in Pittsburgh, people in Western Pennsylvania all knew who I was because of what I had done many, many years before that. So I brought a recognizable name. So at least if I was going to show up at a Kiwanis meeting or whatever, people would come to the meeting just because I was going to be there. And then, you know, the biggest part was that was the part of getting people to understand and know what it was and what we were trying to do. Then the recruitment of the players was the second part. And I don't think my name really helped me as far as recruiting players went, but it really gave me the satisfaction because I knew and I could talk to them understanding where they were at, mm-hmm. where they felt that they were good enough. They wanted an opportunity and they just hadn't got it. And I was going to be able to offer them that opportunity. Once I offered them the opportunity and they took it, hey, it's up to them what they do with it. And they have to run with it from there. But that was really the draw for me from the player side was I could identify with every player that sat in every one of these lockers because I very well could have been one of those people.
Do you still keep in contact with any of the ones that you were able to develop a relationship with?
Not really. I mean, you know, it's kind of even with the major league guys, you know, obviously the World Series team, we get together every 5 years. Other than that, you know, once your baseball life ends, everybody kind of goes their own direction. You know, you have life after baseball. You know, you're spread out all over the country. You're not all together for 6, 7, 8 months a year. So, you know, a few years ago when we had the 20th anniversary thing, it was neat to see some of the guys that I, not only some of the guys that I had here for the first few years, but some of the guys that had followed up and had been in the same situation and to meet the coaches and talk to them and all that. So David Bradley, who went to Marietta, the same school I went to, was probably the only one over the years that I've kept fairly well in touch with. The rest of the guys, you know, everybody went off. Some of them went on to play some pro ball. Some of them didn't. Some of them went to other Frontier League teams, different independent league teams, you know, continued playing. But, yeah, everybody kind of gets separated, just like you do at the major league level once your careers are over with.
Yeah, going off of that. So you came back for the 20 season. Has anything – what has changed the most since you were here in 02 and 03? Because, like, I know your famous quote is the 3 hours of entertainment and 9 innings of baseball is interrupted about that entertainment.
Yeah.
And Chris Blaine quotes that to us all the time.
Which, yeah, she that's was my paying job. Attention.
Yeah, she was.
Okay, well, that's good.
Which, that's my job. I'm the entertainment, the in-game stuff that we do throughout
right.
every game day. So
there's
has nothing, any
there's
of that
not a period of time where there's nothing going on.
Exactly.
If the players stink, you still got to be good.
Exactly. Has that changed at all from
you know what? It really, really hadn't. Okay. I was very surprised that, you know, what I've been surprised is when I was doing this here for the first time is why doesn't minor league baseball was doing it, but why doesn't Major League Baseball do more of this? Mm-hmm. And they didn't. The game was the game and the game promoted the game. Well, this was a totally different atmosphere at the ballpark. And it was, you know, it took a while for me to get used to not having that 2 minute down period or whatever when you're changing sides mm-hmm. and there's something else going on. So now that has become almost, now if you watch a game on TV, obviously it's commercials, but if you're at the ballpark, if you're down at PNC Park, say, it's entertainment. There's something going on during the game. So that this was really my introduction to in-game entertainment, and I was surprised that it is very much the same. And why not? I mean, it's a formula that works. Mm-hmm. It's a formula that keeps, you know, it keeps the kids entertained, which means that the parents don't have to keep the kids entertained in between innings, which is you know, really with the underlying part of the whole thing. That's what's attractive to them. They don't have to deal with the kids for the whole game. And, you know, it's just a different way of playing the game. So, I think I was a little bit surprised that that same formula, the sponsor had changed, the in-game entertainment had changed, what you were doing had changed. But the formula itself of everything in between innings, and then once that's over with, the focus goes back to the baseball. Mm-hmm. Then the focus goes to the entertainment. Then the focus goes to the baseball. And they actually become two different entities. And very much surprised that that had not changed, and kind of happy that it hadn't changed. Yeah. Because of the fact that it's still, I'm watching and it's still working the same way.
Since that hasn't changed, why do you think that formula works so well in minor league and independent league baseball compared to major league?
Well, I think it's working now in major league baseball because they finally wised up and adopted it to a certain extent. Yeah, it's still not. Well, that's big corporation versus mom and pop operation is pretty much with the difference between the two. But the reason why it works is because it's good. You know, it's part of being at a game, as I know from both sides, being a parent and also being a child, I can't actually remember some of that, is going to the game and having fun. Mm-hmm. Well, as a child, there was that two-minute period where two and a half, however long it was, where there was nothing to do, nothing to keep my interest. So I'm picking around the peanuts on the floor or whatever and, you know, trying to entertain myself as opposed to having something going on that keeps my entertainment. And then that, of course, as we was saying before, gives the parents that two-minute break that they don't have to worry about the kids. Somebody else is taking care of their kids for them. It's like having a third person come along with you to the game, and they're going to take care of your kids and entertain them when the game is not doing it. Mm-hmm. So that's my assessment of it. And, you know, Major League Baseball, because it's a big corporation, because it's, you know, big money and everything else is never going to get to that level, won't be nearly as creative as independent league and minor league baseball is as far as how they go about doing that entertainment.
One of the other things I talk about all the time is trying to figure out what makes this so special. And part of it is that entertainment. Part of it from a baseball point of view is these guys, some of my favorite moments are getting the call or the text that this guy is going to affiliated ball, to be able to watch that kid go into the manager's office, because I already know that it's happening.
Yeah.
Watch that kid go into the manager's office, get that news, come back out to a ruckus of applause, to be able to go out there and deliver that message to the fans and put it on social. I mean, those people don't truly understand what that moment means to the player. And I think that's part of what makes independent ball so special.
Well, it makes independent ball not only more special, but different. Mm-hmm. In affiliated ball, if you get the call up, if you're an A ball, well, you're going to go to double A. It's going to be a team. You know what the name of the team is. You know what city the team is. You know mm-hmm. what organization that team is, because that's the one you're in. In independent ball, when somebody gets the call, they could be going to any organization, to any city, to any level of minor league baseball. I mean, it's just a totally different thing. It's so wide open, and it's not as predictable. You can follow minor league baseball, and you know who the prospects are, and you know who the suspects are, and you kind of got an idea who might get promoted, or if you follow it, if you're one of those people who wants to follow it that closely, you've known a Henry Davis ever since the day he got drafted. But, these guys, nobody had ever heard anything about them. The other thing, and I'll add this on, not from a player's perspective, but having grown up in the South Hills, or in Pittsburgh in the South Hills, because we've lived in the South Hills ever since I first came here and we bought our first house, Washington County has always been, and at least in my mind, the one area where baseball rivaled football, high school level, mm-hmm. whatever it is. It seemed like Washington County is the area that was most involved with, you know, baseball, whether that be the Pony League connection, whether it just be the interest of the people in Washington County. I don't know what it was, but that has always been there. So Washington, to me, and when I first heard from Leo, I'm thinking to myself, anywhere in Pittsburgh, where would you put this team? You would put it in Washington, because Washington is where the baseball interest at least is equal to the interest in football. Everywhere else, their baseball is a secondary to football. So Washington was the perfect place for this to be, and is, I'm sure, is a big reason why it has thrived here, because the people of Washington got their own baseball team. That's more special to them than the people in the North Hills having their own independent baseball team.
Right. I know a lot of the things, and Stephanie and I and the entire office, we talk about this all the time. One of our favorite things, and it goes, and I'm a baseball guy. So obviously the entertainment aspect, I'm part of it. I love it. I enjoy it, but I'm a baseball guy. And it kind of irks me when other people aren't baseball guys. But at the same time, there's value in that entertainment. And some of the best things that this organization and other places in indie ball, our league, other leagues, that we do is to watch the broken bat go to a kid, or right, to watch a player sign an autograph, and the kids, they don't know who, I'll just use a couple of our guys as an example. They don't know Andrew Check from Andrew McCutchen sometimes.
It could be now, Rob Check's son, who right, was our original center fielder.
Exactly. So they don't know these guys from the next guy, but it's still, that's still like, oh, that's a professional baseball player. And
right,
those moments that you can create, whether that, and that goes to Stephanie's work and my previous work and up for 22 years now, the work of the in-game and the mascot and those moments make this place what it is. Those moments are some of the best moments that you're going to come across in sports.
Well, again, it's the interaction between the fans and the players, and particularly the young fans, because they're the fans that are the adults of tomorrow who's going to bring their kids here. Hopefully everything works out and you survive, and you know, everybody, you know, they pass the love of the Wild Things on to the next group of Wild Things. But I don't know if they still do it now or not. I made it a point the first 2 years that everybody except for the starting pitcher, and if the starting pitcher got knocked out early enough where he already had ice on his arm and he was ready, everybody on the team spent 20 minutes along the rails after the game signing autographs for the fans every night. Everybody was there. Nobody was allowed to leave until I left. And I did that on purpose, and you know, because I understood about the relationship that was going, that hadn't developed yet, but was going to develop between whoever was in that uniform. Whether it was Joe Cuervo back in 2001, or if it's somebody today, the relationship between them and the fan is always going to be the same. And that's why I always tried to keep the roster as stable as possible so that the fans could learn who the players were. The guys weren't going in and out all the time. They knew who, you know, Ryan Ellis was, who was playing second base. They knew them personally.
I think that's another big piece of this. Let's talk a little bit after the Wild Things for you. You obviously broadcasted for a long time. That was a treat, I'm sure, to be able to cover the team that you played for. With AT&T and Root and all the other
teams,
all the other names that it was. But you were inducted into the Pirates Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, and that had to be a tremendous honor too.
Yeah, it was a tremendous honor, and it was also, I mean, a huge surprise because of the fact that until 2 years ago, the Pirates Hall of Fame never existed. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you didn't ever think about, well, you know, I did pretty good when I was at the Pirates, but, you know, will I be in the Hall of Fame? Well, no, because there isn't any Hall of Fame. And right, you know, so I get inducted into the second class. Steve Blass, Dave Parker went into the first class with all the, obviously, the Cooperstown Hall of Famers that played for the Pirates. And Danny Murtaugh was inducted in that group. And, you know, to be inducted in the second class was quite a surprise, because, I mean, I just know about how many great players that I played with, knowing my history of the Pirates, how many great players I knew played before me. And, you know, and then there are some that played so far before me that I don't even know about. To be in that group so early in the process was really a thrill and really an honor. And you know, the first thing that goes into your mind when you get, you know, you get that news is, did I really do that good? I mean, you know, I knew I was good, okay, and during my period of time, you know, we won and all this other stuff, but compared to everybody in almost 150 years now that ever played for the Pirates, am I good enough that I should be in the second class of the Hall of Fame? I never thought of myself as having been that impactful, that good, or whatever else. And that's, you know, obviously up to somebody else to figure out. But it was just a thrill and an honor and a very huge surprise when it happened.
The last thing I have for you, there might be people who are listening to us or watching us on YouTube again that they are not the diehard Wild Things fan. We're also, with this podcast I mentioned earlier, going for the casual fan. We're going for the people who don't know who we are.
Or the people like me that just sit at home at night and look at YouTube whatever comes up. That's what's entertaining me.
What's your give a pitch to them to give us a chance, to give the Wild Things or give independent baseball a chance?
I think, you know, you can't understand what it's all about. You can't understand the enthusiasm of the players, of the coaches and the managers, of the people doing the in-game entertainment, the people that are doing the radio and the TV. I don't know if you still do TV.
I do
occasional TV games. But to just come out and watch a game, when we were first starting this thing, my challenge to everyone was come watch one game. If you watch one game, you will find out if you like it or not. If you don't like it, fine. If it's not your thing, fine. But just give it a chance and come and watch one game, and you will be amazed at the number of people that I've talked to over the years who said, I came and I watched that one game. And that next year I had season tickets. So it is that entertaining. It's so close up. It's so personal that it's just different than going to even a minor league, affiliated minor league ballpark or a major league ballpark. It's different. It's a different experience. Obviously, it's a different cost structure. The prices are different and everything else, but the bottom line is the entertainment is just as good. And that's really what you're coming to see. Come out and find out if it is something that you would enjoy. If you enjoy it, I won't have to invite you back. Come back on your own.
And we'll take that for sure. Big thanks to Kent Tekulve for jumping on here on episode 1 of Into the Wild. Hopefully we can follow it up. But again, we've got a lot more planned for you going forward, bi-weekly episodes and everything down the line. And next, we will sit down with manager Tom Bates and talk about the team for the 2024 season, more geared toward the diehard. But we hope that you'll stay with us on Into the Wild.
The Wild Things are looking for host families for the 2024 season. Host families welcome a player or players into their home for the season while the player chases their dreams. Hosting a player can provide a great experience for the empty nester or the growing family by putting a role model and professional baseball player in a home with children. Host families enjoy numerous benefits, including free tickets to games, an end-of-season on-field ceremony with gifts, and the opportunity to take part in a meet-the-team picnic before the season begins. For more information, visit WashingtonWildThings.com or call Vice President of Baseball Operations, Kyle Dawson, at 724-250-7654 to learn more about our host family program today. Wild Things Park and Wild Things Games are the perfect places to host your company outing, party, family get-together, birthday party, and more. Check out the Goosebumps Smart Tech and Solar Solutions Suite Level, the EQT Pavilion, and the Pepsi Party Deck and hit a home run for your outing or party. Bring between 10 and 80 people to one of our luxury suites, 30 to 80 people on the party deck, or 20 to 300 people in the pavilion. Food and beverage options, including buffet-style packages, are available. Call our front office for more information at 866-456-WILD. That's 866-456-WILD.
Back from the break on Into the Wild, Episode 1. Sitting here with Tom Vaith, skipper of the Washington Wild Things, and we're going to do this every couple weeks, whether that's bi-weekly on each episode or once a month and figure things out. Tom Vaith, skipper, joins us. We're going to talk a little bit about last year and then put it to bed. And then 2024, we look ahead to the 22nd season of Wild Things Baseball here as we get set for it. So, Tom, welcome. Appreciate you doing this. Tom's in California right now, so we're dealing with a little bit of technical difficulty, but we're going to make it work out at the California Winter League. Let's put 2023 to rest with a couple quick questions here. First off, there were a couple real good performances. Certainly don't want to downplay the things that Anthony Brocato did, Andrew Cech, and plenty of others. It wasn't like it was all bad, despite a 47-49 record. Still some very big positives out of last year, I think, for the group.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the way that some of the young kids played down the stretch. Gives me a lot of optimism and a lot of hope heading into this year. And really excited to see what they can do now coming back in and getting to start kind of from scratch and getting a fresh start with us at the beginning of the season.
Andrew Cech being one of those guys that, and we'll talk about a bunch of the guys that are coming back for 2024 in a second, but a guy that drew 88 walks last year, probably snubbed an all-star bid, great power season for him, returning to kind of what he was in the 2021 year and his first year. Maybe not the biggest standout offensive. I think that'd be Anthony Brocato with the postseason all-star selection, but Checker had a good year for us and hopefully his fourth year will continue to kind of be that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're really excited to have him back. You know, he's a fan favorite and rightly so. He's done a really good job for us over the years. He's grown into a team leader. He's a big voice in that clubhouse, keeps things light on the bus for us. You know, and that's not even the talks to begin to talk about the production he gives us on the field. So it's been a joy from my standpoint to watch him grow into that role, to become a leader for us. And so really happy he chose to come back with us. You know, it was kind of up in the air for a bit, whether he was going to maybe explore some other options and move on. And but really happy he decided to, you know, to come back for that fourth year.
Also got some really good performances before we touch on the team aspect real quick, whether that's some of the young guys. Carson Clowers coming in, doing what he did defensively. J.C. Santini probably ended up playing a little bit more as a backup catcher than anybody really would have liked, maybe other than him. But he excelled in the role, at least defensively, especially when he was in there. Young guys like Caleb McNeely, Daryl Frigio, Zach Kirby coming in late in the year and doing some good things. Be remiss if we didn't mention Robert Chaco with the rookie season that he had coming out of the California Winter League. A lot of young guys that did some good things down the stretch for a team that was still fighting to be in it until the last week of the season.
Absolutely. And, you know, I found out from Mr. Tassler while I've been here that Chaco, you know, did finish second in the Rookie of the Year race. And so, you know, no one really expected that. To be honest with you, I didn't expect him to make it out of camp for us. But his performance just, I mean, he forced his way onto it and he just took it and ran with it all season. And so again, he's, as we mentioned earlier, he's one of that group that, you know, you really hope that the learning can continue and he can keep progressing in his career and that he can come in and be that guy for us again.
Let's touch briefly on the overall year. I think out of the gate, things were a little bit slow. I mean, people who followed along last year would understand. It got better as the season went along. Obviously, in the end, it's a 47-49 season. And you know, that is what it is. But from an expectation standpoint, the expectations here remain high to bounce back from that. and make sure that that kind of thing doesn't happen again, which is what we're all trying to avoid in the end.
Right. You know, and you're exactly right. Obviously, the start wasn't what we were looking for, and we got behind the eight ball a bit there and just dug ourselves a little bit too big of a hole that we couldn't get out of. But again, I think if we went back and looked, and you can probably confirm this, that I think after the All-Star break, we had either the second or third best record in the entire league. And so, you know, we did have a good turnaround. Unfortunately, we did come up a bit short there in the last 3 days. Obviously, the loss to Evansville kind of hurt us.
For sure. Let's switch gears a little bit. The people who have followed along in the offseason so far, they see what's going on in terms of guys that have been re-signed or extended, or, you know, whatever the case may be, they're playing on their options. There are some big pieces back from last year's team, being those young guys or guys that have a little bit more experience. Justin Goosen Brown, for example, coming back. Lucas Young with a little bit more experience back. There's a pretty good mix, I think, of experienced guys that are coming back, but also rookies last year that are back and looking to take that next step for this team and make it competitive again.
Right. So Matt Dallas will be rejoining us. You know, we just made a trade for Kyle, with Kyle White for another young lefty in Frankie Giuliano. And we do have some other rookies that are coming in. It'll be brand new, an exciting lefty that we're anxious to take a look at in camp out of Wake Forest, who had a really good career there and then went on to pitch in New Jersey, I believe at Keene College. So, yeah, there's some exciting parts that we've added. But, again, you never really know what you're getting until you get them in front of you and get to see them with your own eyes. So I'm expecting a lot of battles in camp, which is always a good thing. Competition always brings out the best. And, you know, if we can do that, and these guys can push each other, then I think, you know, we should be okay. And that 24-man roster, we should definitely be getting the best of the best.
I think there's some degree of expectation in this room, front office, and in the fan base here. People have to understand that in independent baseball, and you've been doing it long enough, in indie ball, those types of years are going to happen where it looks like you have what you want going into the season. Some things don't pan out, other things, whatever. And that kind of down year, if you will, is just bound to happen to teams at some point after two playoff appearances and couple of division championships in a row, and you reload and retool. And I don't know that people quite understand the process is just going to be like that sometimes going into 2024 here.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, listen, we would all love to be the cream of the crop and the top of the division every year. And unfortunately, there are times when you do have to reload, and it takes time for them to find their footing and their way. Takes time for them to grow into their roles and their new surroundings. And listen, the whole landscape of not only the Frontier League, but all of independent baseball is changing, and it's changing rapidly. And I think you're going to see the fans that have followed this league for years, I think they're going to see a difference this year when they come out to the ballpark. And the league is definitely trending younger and younger and every day. And the fact that, you know, unfortunately, because of the start we had last year, we had to flip the roster over kind of midway through the season, which, again, didn't necessarily help us in achieving our goals last year. But I can tell you this, it's definitely put us a step ahead at this point where we are now going into the upcoming season. The fact that guys like Matt Dallas, the guys, you know, guys like Dariel Frigio, Zach Kirby, like you mentioned before, Carson Clowers, Tommy Caulfield, all those guys got valuable experience that had the roster look different last year. Either A, they're not with us, or B, they're sitting the bench. You know, and so they're coming in, and they'll still be considered a first year rookie, but they've already got half a year experience. And, you know, so I like to think we got a head start on kind of what the league is trending to be. So From that aspect, I think the outlook is very good for us going forward.
I want to touch on some of the stuff that's happened in winter ball. Obviously, primarily it's been over in Australia with the ABL. Kobe Foster, a real good year season after a little bit of a shaky start with Perth. Several former Wild Things, including one who you managed here in Nick Ward and one who you will manage here in 2024 in Briley Knight for Adelaide, winning a championship. That experience can be valuable for a few reasons. Number one, those guys experience winning a championship. And other guys, in Nick's case, he's going to be off in greener pastures and with the Atlanta Braves organization. But Briley has that chance to not only play for the Team Australia team, but he's playing for a championship-winning Adelaide team. And now he can bring that experience back over here. And the college experience that he's got, college summer was great. And those kind of success stories, I think, can do wonders for you coming back here.
Absolutely, yeah. Adding championship pedigrees is always a good thing. And I don't care where it happened or whether it was in high school, like you said, college, whether it was D1, D2, D3, junior college, or be it a winter league like it down in Australia. And I don't know how much of our fans followed any of that ABL stuff, but Briley Knight actually got the game winning hit, win the championship. So, if he comes in and competes and is able to win a spot for us. I mean, yeah, those are all keys and big helps for us going forward. Because when you've got a taste of it, you want more of it. And you understand how it got done in the first place and how you accomplished it. And so, even though he may be a first year pro, that's valuable experience that he can come in and share with guys in that clubhouse.
Sin talking with manager Tom Vaith here on Into the Wild episode one. Tom, I want to go back a little bit generally. You sat down on the phone with Stephanie Keller, our other vice president, the other day, and there's a story up on the website. Kind of give people, I mean, people can go read it, right? But give people an idea of you off the field. I mean, you and I get together on the pregame show, we're talking baseball, but I think off the field, Tom probably deserves to get recognized a little bit too. And people get to know you and maybe they, better fans of the organization because of it.
Well, first, I appreciate you asking that and giving me this platform. As I did with Stephanie, I thought Stephanie did a great job on that piece. And I've got a lot of people, not only in my life, friends and family, but also a lot of people back in Winnipeg from my days with the Goldeyes that read that and follow the Wild Things now because of that. And they were really happy with the piece. And I know kind of a perception out there that, people only see me from the stands as a guy who maybe is kind of locked in and focused in the game and isn't necessarily trying to joke around or things like that too much. And but that's because it's business and it's time to work. I know you've been on the bus with me. We've had a lot of good times and laughs over the 3 years already. And, we like to have a lot of fun away from the field and we like to have the fun, maybe before the gates are open behind closed doors. And I think you and I have busted a gut on more than one occasion sitting in my office. But that's kind of when that's supposed to take place. And when you're between the lines, it should be about business. And business, our goal for this business is to win a championship. Make no mistake about it. And, I take that very serious and I take that responsibility very seriously. So as I told Stephanie, and I want to win first and foremost for the fans. I would like to put a ring on your finger. I'd like to put a ring on Stu Williams' finger. Chris Blaine, Tony, you name it. And that works. Anybody that's associated with the Wild Things. And I want to give these fans a championship. And we got close. We got real close. And we've got a taste of it. And, I hope everybody's hungry to get back to where we belong and where we should be. So on the field is you get that's one thing. But off the field, I try to be very friendly and I like to try to be outgoing with some people. I am shy at nature with people I don't know, but, I definitely would like to know or let the fans know that, don't go under the mist or have the misconception that I'm not approachable or I can't be talked to, or I invite everybody to come say hello and try to get in a conversation. And I am definitely looking forward to the season ticket holder dinner that we're going to have before the season. And I don't know what else there is to say about it.
I was going to say, people don't realize I sat next to fishing rods on the way up to Canada the 1 year. So the fishing is certainly a big part of Tom V.
Yeah, if I'm not on the baseball field, there was anything else I could do, it would be somewhere on the water fishing. And, so that's the personal side of me, is what I like to do, is I like to be in the outdoors. And, but other than that, I think the other thing I'd like to take people to take away from that interview was, you know, how much I care about my players and honestly, how much I do care about this organization and the fan base. And, if anybody sees me outside in the grocery stores or at Walmart or wherever I might be, please don't hesitate to come say hello, have a chat. I'm all for that. I would love nothing more than that.
All right. Well, we'll do this probably once a month, maybe more, depending on how things go as we heat up. And then, of course, Tom's interviews that we'll return to on the pregame shows this year for the games will be posted on these pages as well. Tom, get back to it. Are you guys in the playoffs, your team out in California?
Yeah, so there's two divisions out here. They have what they call the International Division, which basically the four Canadian names, which are Canadian in name only, but and then the U.S. Division. So my team did finish first in the Canadian Division, and so we will have the number one seed going into the playoffs starting tomorrow. And you can catch that. If anybody wants to watch that, you can go on the CWL, the California Winter League website. They stream those games from the big stadium. So, but I am looking forward to continuing doing this with you. And as you and I have already spoke, as we go along, as we close the season, there will be some big announcements that we'll be able to make about players that are coming that have signed. And there's definitely some good news coming down the pike. So make sure you stay tuned and be ready for that.
Yeah, so stay locked to Into the Wild, Tom Vaith says. Tom, thanks for doing this, and we'll catch up when you get back from California.
All right, thanks, Kyle.
We'll be back with more to close things out on episode 1 of Into the Wild.
Are you planning a group outing with your friends, coworkers, or family members? A Wild Things game is an affordable and entertaining way to knock your next outing out of the park. Group rates for 10 or more tickets start at just $10 per ticket, with group accommodations of 10 to 3,200 people. Call our front office for more information at 866-456-WILD. Or go to WashingtonWildThings.com for more information. Become a bigger member of the Wild Things by joining our season ticket member family. With plans starting at $150, you can take your fandom to the next level. 13-game, 25-game, and full-season plans are available, giving you the right to pick your games, reserve your seats, and be here for the biggest nights of the 2024 season. Call our front office at 866-456-WILD or head to WashingtonWildThings.com for more information.
Well, that's a wrap for episode 1 of Into the Wild. Make sure to follow, make sure to drop a rating, a review, wherever you listen or watch your podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeart Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. And tell your friends, they're missing out. Thanks to the rubber band man, Kent DeColvey, Tom Vaith, for joining us, and Stephanie Keller for being a co-host as well on episode 1 of Into the Wild. We will see you in about a week and a half right here on Into the Wild. Until then, so long. Thanks for listening, or thanks for watching.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.